The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Trevor Serra. On Tuesday, August 27th at 4:30 p.m., the Climate Action Advisory Board meeting will be held at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue, as well as virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the meeting online. On Wednesday, August 28th at 5 p.m., the Corvallis Forest Stewardship Plan Update Task Force meeting will be held at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be held virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Serra.
This is Wendy Byrne, a Corvallis resident with a keen interest in local civics. As a transportation cyclist with a desire to see an increase in micromobility in and around our city, for years now I've been trying to crack the seemingly cryptic code of how things work in our government. I'm not there yet, but I have been learning, and I'd like to share my insights with you. I will be covering details about our city council and how our city functions. Today, I'm covering some detailed information about land use planning in our downtown core. In late 2023, owners of the downtown hotel Courtyard Corvallis by Marriott purchased additional property in the 400 block of Southwest 2nd Street. Since then, they have submitted a land use application to demolish the standing buildings in lieu of a 12-space parking lot. While some land development plans are allowed outright, this plan is a conditional use, and as such, must pass muster per the City of Corvallis Land Use Code and Comprehensive Plan. To that end, the case came before the Corvallis Planning Commission for its initial hearing on June 5th of this year. At that time, the city staff report recommended approval with certain conditions, and the applicant asked for additional time to provide more input to the commission. The commission met again on July 3rd, where it unanimously denied the application. Planning Commission decisions are sent to the City Council for review and final decisions. On August 5th, during their regular Monday night meeting, the Corvallis City Council opened the hearing of the Marriott Parking Services appeal. All 9 members of the council were present, and they followed standard procedure for a land use hearing, including presentations from staff and the applicant, as well as community comments. At that point, the hearing was declared closed, and there were deliberations of the council, followed by a motion to deny the application and a 5-4 vote in approval of the denial. Follow me? Full details of all these proceedings can be found at the city's website at archives.corvallisoregon.gov. Local newspapers, the Corvallis Gazette Times and the Corvallis Advocate, were covering the story, and some community members were moved to comment on the situation. Unfortunately, some comments came too late to be heard by the council, as once the hearing is declared closed, council members are discouraged from receiving new input on the topic. Despite that fact, letters such as this have value. Letters to the editor, the Corvallis Gazette Times, August 22, 2024. Title of letter, A Safe, Thriving, Sustainable Future. Author, Karen Smith of Corvallis, as read by Wendy Byrne. Recently, both the Corvallis Planning Commission and the Corvallis City Council rejected Courtyard Corvallis' application to demolish a building to put in a 12-space parking lot. The council's decision was divided, and we heard arguments such as, people are driving cars, and they want to park, and that's the reality. Is there another way that doesn't involve paving paradise to put up a parking lot? Research says yes, and Vibrant Oregon Downtowns encourages Oregon's downtowns to change and thrive. When reading through Vibrant Oregon Downtowns' recommendations, a common thread becomes clear. Focusing on humans instead of cars makes a difference. Instead of housing cars, a lot might house a mixed-use building with people dwelling above businesses. Instead of prioritizing cars in our public spaces, people walking, biking, and taking transit should be prioritized. As Vibrant Oregon Downtown says, great streets, thriving businesses, and popular public spaces take effort, time, vision, and leadership. The Riverfront Commemorative Park is so popular, it's hard to remember that it wasn't always a people-friendly, beautiful destination. Before it was built, people were worried it would be bad for downtown to remove parking. It took vision and leadership to create something amazing. While people wanting to park is the current reality, it does not have to be. Our city council members are not elected to perpetuate the current reality. Instead, they should direct the trajectory of our future. I know the future I want for my family and my community, a safe, sustainable, thriving one. Karen Smith, Corvallis. With the August 5th vote split at 5-4 for the tentative denial of the application, the council requested staff to return to them with a report supporting the denial, and the case was scheduled to return on August 19th. In the ensuing 2 weeks, people in the community celebrated the idea that the fabric of our downtown would not have a hole punched in it for the addition of a small number of parking spaces. During their August 19th meeting, the city council revisited their previous decision, and despite a staff report with robust backing for the denial, two votes changed. One member of the council, Tracy Yee, reversed her vote, and one member of the council, Gabe Shepherd, was absent, and so the outcome was reversed at 3-5. Here is what the Corvallis Gazette Times wrote and published about it this week. This is Wendy Byrne reading an article from the Corvallis Gazette Times from August 21st, 2024, titled, Corvallis Now Ready to OK Marriott's Request for More Parking. The Corvallis City Council signaled this week it wants to change course and approve an additional parking lot by Courtyard by Marriott it initially rejected. On August 5th, council members had voted 5-4 to tentatively deny the appeal by Marriott owner Corvallis River Run LLC to replace two commercial buildings, the former Cyclotopia store and a previous site eyed as a live-work development, with a 12-space lot for the hotel. This vote followed a unanimous denial by the Planning Commission in July, though staff had recommended approval with conditions. But on Monday, August 19th, when Mayor Charles Maughan called for a vote to officially deny the appeal, only three councillors, Bria Lewis, Charlene Ellis, and Paul Schaefer, voted to approve the motion. This was followed by some confusion from Maughan and other council members. Quote, somebody changed their vote, in effect, from being in favor 2 weeks ago to being opposed tonight, unquote, Schaefer said. Quote, and I'm just wondering, was there something specific in the exhibit that triggered that, or was this a broader change of heart, unquote. Councillor Tracy Yee announced that she had changed her vote. Did I have a change of heart? Yeah, I was on the fence at the last vote, and I didn't talk about it a lot, she said. Yee said she felt that the merits of the application itself were lacking, but her reasons to deny were not necessarily relevant to the code, she said, and after further contemplation, following the August 5th meeting, she feels she had voted the wrong way. The council then amended the original motion and voted to have city staff come back with findings and conditions that support the approval of the hotelier's appeal. Only Ellis and Lewis voted no to the amended motion. Councillor Gabe Shepherd was not present at the meeting. After the vote, Maughan said that he would prefer that council take its time and deliberations and make a decision that is final. It's difficult for staff, it's difficult for the community to understand our direction when we change our direction, honestly, he said. If you need a recess to consider the information, you can call for one. A definitive action regarding the appeal is now scheduled for the City Council meeting on September 16, according to City Manager Mark Shepherd. Editor's note, this article has been updated to reflect that the next City Council vote on the Marriott application has been changed to September 16th. This article was written by Ella Hutcherson and published in the Gazette Times on August 21st, 2024, as read by Wendy Byrne. So here we are. The council has asked the planning department staff to return to them on September 16th with findings that support staff's original recommendation of approval with conditions. Those conditions include that the parking lot, will need to have more open space fronting 2nd Street, which they will likely appeal to the state's Land Use Board of Appeals. All of this for 10 to 12 parking spaces? What is really going on here? And how do we, the people, get involved at a time when we can make a difference? Because I have been watching and listening and learning, and believe you me when I say that it does not matter if you are passionate about what you think about downtown. What matters is the language of our land use code and our comprehensive plan. If those documents support a walkable, human-scale downtown, that is what we will get. If they do not, then we will get parking lots in place of retail businesses. If you are listening to this, and if you are saying to yourself, how can I help change this situation for the better in the future? Please know, there are vacancies on the Planning Commission. If you're interested in applying for the position on the Planning Commission, you can find it at CorvallisOregon.gov/advisory groups. Thanks for listening. This has been Wendy Byrne for KORC News, Information, and Civics. 105.9 FM, KORCFM.com.
The Hiroshima Nagasaki 79th anniversary commemoration occurred on August 8th at Riverfront Park. KORC was there and had the opportunity to record and share selected presentations with you, as well as music offered. Listeners, you'll hear Carly Inez from Sunrise Corvallis facilitating the event and describing the flotilla, which is an event that occurs on our own Willamette River. Then you'll hear long-term activist Gretchen Newland speak about the experiences of citizens of Hiroshima from the Hiroshima Japan City website. Then we will feature traditional Kodo music performed by Masumi Timpson. We'll end this sampling of presentations with Drop-In Center Coordinator Alita Hass Holcomb, who will read a statement from United States Senator Jeff Merkley, who represents the state of Oregon. KORC will continue featuring speakers from the Hiroshima Nagasaki 79th anniversary commemoration for KORC News, Music, and Civics in the coming weeks.
My name is Carly Inez. I use any and all pronouns. I work with Sunrise Corvallis, which is a youth-led climate and housing justice organization. Watching the flotilla go by on the river is a solemn evocation of the actual commemorations in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where both cities float candles in their rivers in memory of the hundreds of thousands killed by the nuclear bombs. In these ceremonies, thousands watch from the riverbanks, just as we will do here in our community. I will now introduce Gretchen Newland. Gretchen has been a member of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki Commemoration Organizing Group for nearly a decade, an anti-apartheid activist for Palestinian human rights, an activist for the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, or BDS movement, a fundraiser for Middle East Children's Alliance water purification projects, and an anti-war activist and proponent of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. Thank you, Gretchen.
We are all here to commemorate a tragic, horrific event in 1945, August 6, 1945. And so I gleaned from the Hiroshima City website, I gleaned a paragraph or two about that horrific day, actually 2 days in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I encourage you to go to the Hiroshima City website. It's very interesting, full of information. You know, they were eating breakfast. Monday morning, August 6, 1945, Hiroshima, Japan. The sky was clear and bright. They were eating breakfast on their way to work, beginning the day. Suddenly an air raid alarm was broadcast over their city. Air raids the day before had been cleared, but not this day. At 8:15 a.m., the United States dropped the first atomic bomb used against human beings. 43 seconds later, with a blinding flash, the bomb exploded, creating a fireball that blazed like a small sun. It was more than 1 million degrees Celsius at its center. The fireball reached a radius of over 200 meters, and the surface temperature near the hypocenter rose to 3,000 to 4,000 Celsius. At the time of the explosion, fierce heat waves and radiation burst out in every direction, causing the air around the fireball to expand and creating a super high pressure blast. The complex interactions of these three factors inflicted tremendous damage upon the city. The damage inflicted was characterized by instant and massive destruction, radiation, indiscriminate mass slaughter, mostly civilians. Damage caused by the radiation led to decades of human suffering. The precise number of deaths is unknown, but estimates range from approximately 140,000 to 180,000 human beings. 3 days later, the U.S. dropped a bomb on the city of Nagasaki, killing between 50,000 and 100,000 people. Again, mostly civilians of all ages. In the years that followed, many of those who survived would face leukemia, cancer, other terrible side effects from the radiation. After Hiroshima and Nagasaki, no atomic bomb has been dropped in wartime. To do so is unthinkable. But until nuclear weapons are abolished entirely, it could happen again. We don't want that. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
the president of the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center, a community-based resource hub providing information, referral, and direct services for people experiencing homelessness and poverty in Benton County and beyond. Thank you, Alita.
Hi, thank you for being here. I'm here tonight to read a statement from Jeff Merkley, and I think that I would preface it by that he definitely would have been here if he could have, and he was sorry to be absent, but sent this in his set. Greetings. Today we observe the 79th anniversary of the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, on August 6th and 9th, 1945. As we reflect on the gravity of this poignant and tragic anniversary, we must carry its lessons forward to pursue a path of global peace and security in the 21st century. I began my career in public policy working on nuclear nonproliferation as I felt it was one of the most critical issues facing humanity. Although we've made significant progress, it is important we remain vigilant, recognizing that there is much more work to be done while our nation confronts emerging and ongoing challenges that threaten to erode our progress. As co-chair of the bicameral Nuclear Weapons and Arms Control Working Group and a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, I have pushed for the U.S. to take a no-first-use approach when it comes to nuclear weapons. Our defense strategy should strike a balance between ensuring national security and investing in vital programs that Americans depend on, such as domestic programs for housing, healthcare, and education. Since the devastating bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the relationship between the United States and Japan, as well as between Oregon and Japan, has flourished into an alliance that is based on democratic ideals and a commitment to peace. Oregonians of Japanese descent have long enriched our communities with dynamic and lasting contributions since the state's beginning. Our state is stronger because of them. We must always recall the tragedies of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and honor the sacrifices of the hundreds of thousands of people who lost their lives in these bombings and the war. Peace is our ultimate goal. All the best. Jeffrey A. Merkley, United States Senator. Thank you.
That was a small sampling of speakers from the Hiroshima-Nagasaki 79th Anniversary Commemoration, which occurred on August 8th at Riverfront Park here in Corvallis. KORC will continue to feature speakers from the Hiroshima-Nagasaki Commemoration for KORC News, Music, and Civics in future broadcasts.
Is it possible that Donald Stable Genius Trump has committed yet another crime? Yes, according to many sources who have reported that Private Citizen Trump has violated the Logan Act, which prevents private citizens from having diplomatic negotiations with foreign governments. This government was Israel when Trump, as PBS reported this week, that Trump spent time with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, urging him to not take part in the ceasefire that is being negotiated by President Joe Biden, because, as Trump was purported to ask, entering the ceasefire would only help Kamala Harris's race for the presidency. This report is based on an Axios story last week that cited two U.S. sources as claiming that Trump and Netanyahu had spoken on the phone about ceasefire and Gaza hostage talks. If so, this conversation was a violation of the Logan Act. Trump and Netanyahu both denied this was the nature of their talk, but Trump himself told reporters, "I did encourage him to get this over with. You want to get it over with fast, have victory, get your victory, get it over with. It has to stop. The killing has to stop," end quote. Trump said that at a New Jersey press conference August 15th, referring to the meeting between he and Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago last month. But he also criticized ceasefire demands, as the two sources claim. The Logan Act goes all the way back to 1799. There have only been two prosecutions under this law, and both cases produced not guilty verdicts. The way around the Logan Act is to register as a foreign agent, and Trump is not registered as a foreign agent. I don't even know if he's an American agent, but it's not the first time Trump has done this. If you remember the conversations the Trump campaign had with Russian agents during the 2016 campaign in Trump Tower, creating a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war is extremely popular with the American public and would certainly be well received in the last few months of the Biden administration. But once again, Donnie Trump doesn't really care what the American public favors. He only wants what he favors. And in Trump world, even that popular ceasefire would only reflect well on Biden and therefore Kamala Harris. He just can't have that, can he? So what's the remedy? Should Donald Trump be charged for violation of the Logan Act? I mean, come on, this law is over 200 years old. Well, what about Hunter Biden, you ask? Biden's son was investigated by a Republican-led Congress for possible influence over business dealings with foreign governments, a violation of the Logan Act, while Father Joe was Barack Obama's vice president. No charges were filed, so should they be brought against Little Hands Don? Not only is he trying to interfere with what elected officials are legally attempting, but he's done it before by influencing Republicans to reject an immigration deal with Democrats because it would make the blue side look too good, just like a ceasefire in Gaza deal would. So, Logan Act violation? Just a case of right or wrong? Or, wait, I've got a better idea. In about 80 days, there's an election. Let's kick the already convicted felon to the curb again. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. KORC is privileged to present segments of Democracy Now! This segment is from Thursday, August 22nd, 2024, and is broadcasting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. For more information on national and international news, visit democracynow.org.
Democratic National Convention in Chicago. This is Democracy Now! War, Peace, and the Presidency, breaking with convention.
Today, I watched my party say our tent can fit anti-choice Republicans, but it can't fit an elected official like me? I do not understand. I do not understand why being a Palestinian has become disqualifying in this country.
Uncommitted delegates are denied their request for a Palestinian American to speak on stage at the convention. They're staging a sit-in just outside the convention hall in protest. Then Minnesota Governor Tim Walz accepts the Democratic nomination for vice president, criticizing the Trump-Vance Republican ticket.
And we know if these guys get back in the White House, they'll start jacking up the costs on the middle class. They'll repeal the Affordable Care Act. They'll gut Social Security and Medicare. And they will ban abortion across this country with or without Congress.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. We're breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz accepted the Democratic nomination for vice president Wednesday night in the third evening of the Democratic National Convention here in Chicago. Walz played up his time as a former high school football coach and outlined his achievements as governor.
We made sure that every kid in our state gets breakfast and lunch every day. So while other states were banning books from their schools, we were banishing hunger from ours.
The iconic talk show host Oprah Winfrey was the surprise speaker of the night. In her first speech ever at a political convention, Winfrey gave a ringing endorsement for Kamala Harris as president.
Soon and very soon, we're going to be teaching our daughters and sons about how this child of an Indian mother and a Jamaican father, two idealistic, energetic immigrants, how this child grew up to become the 47th president of the United States.
We'll have more from inside the Democratic National Convention later in the broadcast. Outside the United Convention Center, delegates from the Uncommitted Movement and their supporters launched a sit-in Wednesday night after the DNC and the Harris campaign refused to let a Palestinian American take the main stage despite allowing family members of Israeli American hostages to address the convention. Earlier in the day, uncommitted delegates and progressive lawmakers gathered for an event outside the DNC. This is Minnesota's Congressmember Ilhan Omar.
Working tirelessly for a ceasefire is really not a thing, and they should be ashamed of themselves for saying such thing. Because we supply these weapons. So if you really wanted a ceasefire, you just stop sending the weapons. It is that simple.
Right.
In response to the Democratic Party's refusal to allow a Palestinian American to speak at the DNC, the group Muslim Women for Harris Walls announced it's disbanding, saying in a statement, "This is a terrible message to send to Democrats. Palestinians have the right to speak about Palestine," unquote. Protesters also took to the streets of Chicago Wednesday for more rallies calling for an end to U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. Climate activists are also at the convention this week to demand Democrats do more to address the climate catastrophe and divest from fossil fuels. On Wednesday, activists disrupted an event by Punchbowl News on the sidelines of the DNC that was sponsored by ExxonMobil. This is California delegate R.L. Miller. In Gaza, Israeli attacks continue to kill more Palestinians, with at least 22 reported deaths today. On Wednesday, at least 13 people were killed, including children, in an attack east of Khan Yunis. This is a father who lost his teenage son.
Oh, my son, Moody is dead. Moody is dead. They hit us and we're all destroyed. He was so precious to me, my oldest son, my darling son.
How old was he?
14 years old. He hasn't seen anything in his life. I went to buy him a rooster and left it on the floor. A mere 10 minutes later, we were hit. God rest your soul.
Another strike on a school acting as a shelter in Gaza City killed two people and injured 10 children. Meanwhile, a new report from Defense for Children International Palestine says Israeli forces are detaining and torturing Palestinian children in Gaza, using children as human shields and, quote, intentionally and systematically, unquote, separating children from their families. The report includes testimony of children survivors, including the case of many boys who were forced to strip naked and walk with their hands bound in front of Israeli tanks and bulldozers. The children are also beaten, denied water, and threatened with dogs. 16-year-old Abdul Minim says he was abducted with his younger brother Ali. He said he was barely able to move after Israeli forces blindfolded them, tied them up, and beat them with rifles before leaving them in the cold. On Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken headed home after his latest visit to the region once again failed to secure a Gaza ceasefire. Blinken warned the failed plan may have been the chance to avert a broader regional war. Israel and Hezbollah continued to exchange cross-border fire Wednesday, with Israel targeting multiple areas across southern Lebanon and Hezbollah blasting over 50 rockets and a swarm of drones in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. Israel also killed a senior member of the Palestine Fatah movement in the southern Lebanese city of Sidon, claiming Khalil al-Makda has orchestrated attacks on Israeli forces in the West Bank. The Fatah party accused Israel of seeking to ignite a regional war. Meanwhile, President Biden spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Wednesday, and as a second U.S. aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln arrived in the Middle East Wednesday as the U.S. bolsters forces in the region. The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences has rejected an attempt by pro-Israel groups and Hollywood celebrities to rescind an Emmy nomination for the widely admired Palestinian journalist Bissan Alda. Alda, who's been reporting from the ground in Gaza since October, was nominated for her Al Jazeera Plus report, It's Bissan from Gaza and I'm Still Alive, which chronicles her family's forced evacuation of their home in Beit Hanun. The pro-Israel group Creative Community for Peace and celebrities like Deborah Messing and Selma Blair accused Alda of spreading anti-Semitism, an accusation which has been widely used against anyone who opposes Israel's war on Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's killed at least two more Gaza journalists in recent days. 26-year-old photojournalist Ibrahim Muharab was killed while covering ground invasions north of Khan Yunis Monday. In Gaza City, Hamza Abdulrahman Murtaja was one of the victims in Israel's attack on the Mustafa Hafiz school this week. Hamza Murtaja was the brother of Yasser Murtaja, who was killed by an Israeli sniper in Gaza in 2018. Some 170 journalists and media workers have been killed in Gaza since October 7th, by far the largest death toll of media workers recorded in any war. Canada's two major rail freight companies have shut down after failed negotiations with union leaders, bringing an unprecedented rail stoppage that threatens to disrupt the U.S.-Canada supply chain. Canadian National and Canadian Pacific Kansas City both locked out 10,000 of its employees as the companies refused to reach an agreement with the Teamsters Canada Rail Conference, which represents the workers. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau spoke Wednesday.
My message is very straightforward. It is in the best interest of both sides to continue doing the hard work at the table to find a negotiated resolution.
In a blow to workers' rights, a federal judge struck down the Federal Trade Commission's ban on non-compete agreements just 2 weeks before it was set to take effect, after ruling the FTC did not have the authority to issue the ban. The new rules would have barred companies from preventing workers from working for a rival or starting their own business. Some 30 million U.S. workers are subject to non-compete agreements. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is widely expected to drop out of the presidential race Friday and endorse Donald Trump. RFK Jr. is addressing his supporters in Phoenix, Arizona, Friday. Trump's also scheduled to be in Arizona. RFK Jr. initially launched his campaign as a Democratic challenger to President Biden before running as an independent, but recent reports say he courted both Harris and Trump for a future job if he dropped out of the race. On Tuesday, Jack Schlossberg, grandson of John F. Kennedy and cousin of RFK Jr., addressed the DNC and declared his support for the Harris-Waltz ticket.
Pray for the picket signs. Pray for the Gaza skies in the dead of night. All the forgotten ones, pray for peace. Pray for a quiet mind. All my life, anniversaries, all the adversities, pray for life.
'Cause
we don't talk anymore, I don't know what for.
Love is all we need. Can we talk a little more? Use our words over war. If you hear my plea, will you rescue me?
Delivered by Iman Jordan, Guy Mamie Goodman here in Chicago.
That was a segment of Democracy Now! From Thursday, August 22nd, 2024, broadcasting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. For more information on national and international news, visit democracynow.org. You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics.
This is Explorin' Lauren reporting from Interzone Cafe on Monroe Avenue in Corvallis with a deadly serious question for our audience. Have you ever heard of a cello goblin? You're hearing the sounds of Rashad Eggleston, also known as Rashadicus, the cello goblin, who travels the world cello in hand, sharing the music and language from the land of Sneth. Based on the California coast, Rashadicus is often on his way to the next town, cello in hand, to share his music with a global network of devoted fans and supporters, and whoever may wander in off the street. He was professionally trained on the cello at Berklee College of Music in Boston on a full scholarship, later releasing Grammy-nominated albums. Eggleston has also served as an instructor at fiddle and string camps for the likes of Mark O'Connor and Mike Block, and has guest lectured at many colleges and universities. Here in the summer of 24, he found himself in Corvallis to climb some trees and to climb the walls of Bombs Away Cafe as he conjured his music from the land of Sneth. The next morning, KORC had a chance to catch up with Rashad Eggleston at Interzone Cafe. His Toyota Prius was packed to the brim with cellos, ready to roll on to his next show in Olympia.
He'll have some of those really dense mega metal moments. Sweet. With you know what I mean? Because I guess what I would want to have represented on the radio is when I was really in the zone, riffing hard, doing abstract growl vocals, and then hitting some blasts of kazoo triumph.
Awesome.
And that's like, you know, kind of like the main default thing. And the other things are just to break it up, you know, to do a Baroque interlude or...
Well, those moments that you're referring to are what I'm interested in capturing around town for community radio. You seem to get out just about every year, right? Just
out this way?
Just like do a tour of some kind.
You know, I've always dug it here, and somehow, because I met these fiddle kids that lived here, and they did a fiddle camp at their house many years ago, 2005 and 6, and it was in Corvallis. Actually, I've been coming to Corvallis since 2001 when I was on tour with this fiddle chick, and she was, you know, came through here.
Yeah.
So.
It's got a little cadre of cool, weird people.
I like it. And what was it that you were saying before that? I can't remember.
Oh, I just try to focus on...
Oh, you that I tour every year.
Yeah.
And that, I tour that you, all the time, more than once a year, for sure. Like, you know, as long as I don't get stuck in some city with a girlfriend, then I pretty much am just on tour, you know, a lot of the time.
But you're open to having the sales change direction mid-tour?
Not, I mean, what happens is I go out on tour and then never come home.
Yeah.
Because I meet somebody, and then I'm just like, you know, my life is spontaneous, so I'm like, oh, why not just move there for a while? Sounds good. But I'm trying to actively prevent against that, because that seems to really put the brakes on my whole momentum and progress as a, you know.
Mm-hmm. Where have you spent most time, like which city or region have you spent most time in the last couple years?
Well, I was living in Nashville for a bit for that reason, but my home zone is in Carmel, California. So, but I'm thinking about moving to Oregon because I like it so much up here. And it has the best trees, you know? I mean, I like the trees in California, of course, wonderful trees also, but I mean, every city in Oregon seems to just have these amazingly tall trees just around, and they're so beautiful because they're fir trees, and those are my favorite. And I've climbed two at night so far here.
Yeah. Cedars are great, too, because they have those branches that come almost all the way down.
Oh, big swoopers?
Yeah, yeah. Red cedar. And I think part of this is that OSU and Corvallis, OSU used to be an agricultural, horticultural college, so it's got that heritage of going way back. So in May, June, this town just explodes with exotic species,
flowers,
foliage,
and
flowers, and and there's even some trees on campus here that had gone up in space with the Apollo mission.
Yeah, I climbed that one last night.
No way.
Yeah, these kids took me to it, and I was like, "Well, I got to climb the moon." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
rope ladder to the moon.
Yeah, as if it wasn't already moon-like enough. Because, you know, when you get to the very top of a tree, it's very rare and precious and lonely, mystical, almost spooky atmosphere, especially fir trees. Because, you know, like the top of pine, sometimes they're kind of like a crown, and there's like some zones up there, or a cypress, you know. But like on top of a fir tree is like very thin and pointy, and it's just you up there, like way up on a tower. So exciting.
Yeah, not a place where human creatures spend much time usually.
Yeah, and the crows notice that. And they freak out. I've had a few times where 30, 40, 50 crows will be cawing and circling the tree, being like, what is going on?
They probably remember you from last year.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Going to a place where the birds are down beneath me. I'm going to a place where the troubles of the world can't reach me. Swaying gently in the breeze, high atop the canopies. My heart feels freest in the tops of the tall green trees. And I'm going to a place with a view that the rich folks can't get. Skipping through the forest like Mother Nature's dance pet. Suddenly I'm not crying, I'm looking at the birds and I'm flying. My heart feels freest in the tops of the tall green trees. Way out on the ocean I see endless white caps. Turquoise water crashing on the rocks through the pines. The misty wind that's blowing keeps the neon mosses growing. I'll be back for as long as I'm alive. Cause I'm going to a place where the triumph is resounding. Staring at the sun to see its pink unrounding. Who needs to run or buy when there's free castles in the sky? My heart feels freest in the tops of the tall green trees. My heart feels freest in the tops of the tall green trees.
Talking about music. Just wondering what if you have anything, any thoughts on small town music scenes, because you're clearly open to just coming to places where there's a little group of people that you like, and that there's a nice cafe that you like, and you know, it's a different economy, a different pace of creativity than a metro area.
That's true, it is. Well, it tends to bring out, you know, the weird people in town. Or what, you know, sometimes maybe more normal people getting to see something that they wouldn't normally see. And both of those things are cool to play for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like bringing a certain energy of abstractness or weirdness to a zone. Because, you know, when they're like, keep so-and-so weird, they make those bumper stickers? Yeah, that's my job. You know, is to come and give them a dose. Maybe it's too dense. You know, it's like a bouillon cube or something, a vegan bouillon cube. It's like, you just need a little bit. So I come and they do I do 2 hours or whatever. Maybe they can only hang for half an hour or 45 minutes, but they definitely get their concentrated dose of jick, and then they can go and have the rest of their normal lives be a little bit more saucy, flavorful. Mm.
Yeah, well, I think Corvallis can use that concentrated hit every year.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, they're saying that the future of the cafe is uncertain. And so I made sure to give it a proper dusting in terms of I climbed up on the speaker there and went up. You know, there's like 1 foot between the speakers and the ceiling. And I got up in there and played it up on my stomach. And with the cello hanging down, the sound back in the speakers.
It sounded pretty good in there.
It sounded great, yeah, up there, because I was like, my whole body was vibrating with the vibrations of the speakers, which were feeding back, and it was exciting.
Yeah.
A unique experience.
Do you only have one cello?
No, I have like four.
Okay.
But I have my main cello, which I chose to not bring on this tour, because I knew it was going to be a really wild and physical tour, because there's a lot of catharsis that needs to happen and a certain level of I need to get physically activated and involved in the show in order to really get kind of like turned on,
get to that place.
Yeah. I don't know how that's come about, but it's just kind of how it goes, you know. And also, I think it excites the people and it keeps them interested, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the show has, of course, a musical aspect and then a visual aspect. And perhaps an olfactory aspect, which, you know, if you're moving around, then people can, even if they don't realize it, they're experiencing you in a primal way. And,
yeah, it's like the sound waves are actually changing with psychoacoustics, like the neural patterns in their brain. It's almost like, I mean, I use the word magic to describe it, but because, you know, it's just pressure waves in the air and watching someone on stage, and yet it can evoke these emotions and this whole journey in your mind just from rubbing some horsehair on a string.
Yeah. I use synthetic hair, by the way, because it doesn't break.
Yes.
And fortunately, it's vegan, too.
We got that on record. Thank you.
Yeah, it's all good. But that's cool to know that the psychoacoustic qualities, you saying it changes people's perception. Something changes the perception of the sound. Maybe the pheromones change how the sound is experienced.
Oh, yeah.
It could be the smell of excitement.
Probably all kinds of chemicals.
Yeah. Well, that's around. Another reminder to, well, see, because I'm always, even in an interview right like this, I'm always looking for little ways to improve my performance and my attitude about the performance, which is what improves it. You know what I mean? And so when talking about that, I am reminded that perhaps they can smell my emotions, and which is all the more important for me to not be broadcasting fear and insecurity up there, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, it isn't always the same. Some nights you feel like just like a golden god, and some nights you feel like a beheaded duck, you know, with no clothes on or whatever, you know, all naked up there and vulnerable. And but it feels important to like hold it down and be like really standing in your power, you know. But maybe not only for your own feeling about it, but so that you can broadcast the right subconscious chemicals to the people, that they can smell it. And smelling those chemicals, it's the secret key to unlock the the order in the chaotic music, that they could find a pattern in there, because it is very chaotic these days, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's just what makes me happy.
You feel like music kind of can open a door, maybe away from that feeling of chaos, if you let it on stage, or am I getting too abstract?
I like getting abstract.
I'm coming from this hospital gig where I'm playing the oud. It's a fretless lute, and it's got a deep... It goes down to low C.
Oh, nice.
And that's supposed to be... I try to create a healing sort of atmosphere. It's accessing a different kind of energy than I think what you're bringing with the high intensity, powerful, bright, and colorful sounds. And it's just a different process, but it's still trying to impart or maybe evoke a sort of healing kind of atmosphere through the music.
Yeah, for sure.
But a relaxing.
There's like lots of different kinds of healing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a bath, and there's like gentle massage, and then there's like karate chopping, like intense stepping on you massage. You know what I mean? So
yeah, death metal shows can heal people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I know a lot of people that I know that are into death metal and black metal and stuff, extreme metal, describe the relaxing quality that it puts them to sleep and stuff. Like, I used to put on Immortal Battles in the North. It's a really good black metal album, and go to sleep to it. It would be like 5 minutes of it, and I'd be asleep.
Yeah. Just kind of neutralize your consciousness.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's almost like the way I experience it is that music at a certain intensity is the... what's needed to match the intensity of the thoughts that come from living in such a crazy world, you know what I mean? And it's all with all the screens and all the info you're taking in all day, just like mainlining just hell of words of all kinds and news items and updates and other people's lives and thoughts about yourself and everybody else and projections and then all the reflections of all that and what it means and how many likes and all this. It's very intense and not to be done away with, because it's a necessary evil for a musician in today's world, especially a weird one. But
a fire hose.
Yeah, but it's so much stuff that I feel like I need really intense music that's maxing out to match it and cancel it out, so then you have peace, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you have, I can't hang with the, like, soothing music these days.
Yeah.
It needs to be wild for me.
Yeah. I unfortunately couldn't catch your show last night, but have you been addressing this kind of chaotic neuroses in society directly in your shows, like with singing or speaking to the audience about that? Or is that just sort of what you're partly responding to with your music? Maybe not responding to, but as much as like dancing with it.
Yeah, it's more of like a... my feelings about all that become a fuel for the, you know, especially because I do a lot of screams, you know, and so all I have to do is think about what's going on there, and it helps power the scream, which is hopefully, I don't know, maybe a more effective way to handle it than, I mean, I am not... really, like,
I didn't mean to say you're trying to offer solutions or something.
Oh, no.
But,
I mean, I don't know what solutions I could offer except for the catharsis in the moment that I am bringing. Because, I mean, that shit is so deep and complex and ancient and all the shit that's going on. Like, I also am not, like, deeply informed enough about it to get on a soapbox and...
like, intellectually.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel it, and I feel the pain of the people who are suffering, and, man, I wish I could play for them. That would be sick, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it still spreads some joy and some catharsis, like you said, which isn't always joyful, and that's okay.
Yeah. It isn't always joyful, but it definitely seems to lead to joy. I am often impressed by the type and number of people that come away from such ferocious bejickment with a smile on their face, you know? Like, they'll be like, sometimes there's like there was this, in Eugene, there was this old lady that had a walker, And I, like, took her walker, and I got tangled up in it with my legs, and then I had people drag me around with my back sliding and head sliding on the floor. And she was so delighted, and then I sat on her lap, and she was like, I'm going to tell my whole family. And this was, she handled 2 hours of straight-up raging, you know, Sneth music, yeah. Burnt death metal vibes or whatever. And she was stoked.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
So, yeah, somehow it translates to joy.
Yeah.
You know, that in a way, it's a formula, and I feel like that's, you know, one of the potential jobs of musicians. You take all the stuff that's happening in the world, which is always pretty much going to be pretty fucked up because it's the world, and take that whole ball of energy and then feed it through the instrument, music, vocal, kazoo, performance machine, and then what went in was destruction, and what came out was joy. Somehow, it's some weird converter.
The transmutation.
Yes,
of
alchemy.
The global.
Exactly, transmutation.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the best I can do for now. Right now.
That's so generous, man.
Yeah.
Giving me
the
time.
Thank you.
It was really fun.
Thank you very much.
Talking
nice,
with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Good talk.
Yeah.
Thanks to Rashad for taking some time to hang out with KORCFM. You can find Rashad's music at rashad.bandcamp.com. That's spelled R-U-S-H-A-D. Also at rashadicus.com. And in hundreds of video clips across all the major social media websites. So keep your ear turned towards Rashadicus, the cello goblin, and always be sure to catch him when he comes through Corvallis, where you can get the full body sensorial experience of Rashad Eggleston.
There you go.
Make sure to tune in to KORC 105.9 Corvallis and KORCFM.com on the internet for
Adventures on the Dragonfly Pinky Toe.
Join me, Captain Galaxy, and my crew,
Xander the Goblin,
and Allie in the Galley,
and Ray in the Bay,
and Lexan Winbrook,
and me, Tiny Ursus,
for Adventures on the Dragonfly Pinky Toe.
Sunday nights at 11 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m.